No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the newest edition of Rise Up, See Red, the Arizona Cardinals podcast hosted by myself, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, a member of the USA Today NFL Wire. And on the line with me is Seth Cox, my co-host from AvengeTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. Seth, how are you doing on this Tuesday evening?
Good, Jess. Just trying to figure out what the heck happened Sunday night. I still don't know.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to talk about. The sky fell Sunday night, and overreaction Monday came and went. So we are the... Well, we're probably going to avoid the hot takes on this show because it's been a little, you know, we're a couple of days removed. So we're going to talk about that loss. We're going to talk about what happened, some of the transactions that are coming or that have happened, and look ahead to the next week. If you missed it, Sunday Night Football season opener, a shorthanded New England Patriots squad came into town. No Tom Brady, no Jonathan Cooper, no Nate Solder, no Rob Gronkowski, no Rob Ninkovich. And, you know, I said on this show last week that the Cardinals needed to win by probably double digits. They were favored by nearly a touchdown. I said, you know, if they don't win, you know, comfortably, then we need to reevaluate what we think about the Cardinals. And, I kind of kicked myself for saying that because I don't know if I want to say that yet. I don't know if I want to say that we have to reevaluate what we think about the Cardinals, other than the fact that that was a disappointing loss.
And I think you do kind of have to reevaluate one thing. There were legitimate questions about the defense. Like, there were so many parts that had moved. There were so many different names and places that there were legitimate concerns about the defense. I think the only thing that happened on Sunday night was you're starting to wonder, is there something wrong with the offense? The last four meaningful games they have played, they have averaged 17 points a game. Now, if you take out the Seattle game where their starting offense only played the first half, they're averaging only 20 points a game. They're averaging 10 points less a game than they were in the 2015 regular season. That is astoundingly bad. And you expect it a little bit with the Carolina game. Like, that's an aberration. Okay, whatever. But the fact that 26 points, 15 points, and then 21 points against, you know, Green Bay, who's really, I mean, really, they only scored 26 points, and it took them overtime to get those other 6 points. That's where the concern is. You had all offseason to game plan for the Patriots defense, and you come out and you get They've had 41 offensive drives since the Seattle game, or since the first Green Bay Packers game when they blew out the Packers. 41 offensive drives. They haven't even scored in double on 10 of those drives. So they're scoring at less than 25%. During the regular season last year, they were at 42.6%. They would score on a drive. Not just touchdowns, but either field goals or touchdowns. I think that is where the concern lies over everything else.
And for me, that's actually the opposite, because I wasn't overly concerned with the offense. I wasn't thrilled. I mean, they didn't come out and play as well as I thought they would. I was more concerned. I wasn't necessarily concerned with the Cardinals side nearly as much as I was impressed by the Patriots, Jimmy Garoppolo, and a respect for the offensive scheme that they have, because it is, and in some ways it reminded me of the New Orleans game, the season opener a year ago. Because last year, Drew Brees picked apart the Cardinals, but it wasn't down the field. It was death by a thousand cuts, as we said it a year ago. And this was sort of the same thing, only the difference between the New England game and New Orleans last year is that the Cardinals on third down were money last year against the Saints, and they had the hardest time getting off the field against the Patriots this time around. And, you know, I was impressed by Jimmy Garoppolo. I didn't expect to have the poise he did. He showed me that he's fine. That, I mean, the Patriots, to me, looking at what I saw there, could be a playoff team with Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm not saying that they're going to go blow out everyone, but combined with the fact that defense is very talented. No, they don't have Rob Ninkovich, but they do have a very good secondary. And so they were giving the Cardinals looks. But I wasn't as concerned with the offense overall, except for a few miscommunications. There were a couple of errors here and there. I know J.J. Nelson and his could J.J. Nelson never figure out where he's supposed to be on the field? He was out in the field on two plays. The first one, he ran the wrong route. And on the second one, he made a nice third down catch and got hurt. And then they had a couple with Michael Floyd as well. The running game, it just wasn't as smooth. And I attributed the issues that the Cardinals had offensively more to the fact that they had a couple of dumb things that had happened to them, some mental errors and some penalties that came up. But I think I attribute it to, one, they probably didn't play enough together in the preseason games. And two, I chalked it up to a New England defense that's quite talented, in my opinion.
They are talented, but I think when you look at the Cardinals offense, maybe expectations were too high, because we started discussing, right? And maybe not you and I, but I've seen in terms of Cardinals fandom discussing, you know, one of the greatest offensive teams ever. 21 points. I mean, getting shut out in the first quarter. That's where my concern lies, because they haven't been a great offense in four meaningful games. And you and I especially were like, it's the preseason. Who cares? You know, we didn't put much stock into it. Like, we really didn't. And I'm not saying we should have, but maybe the byproduct of the slowness and the inability of the offense to, you know, put together consistent drives in the preseason was a precursor to the fact that they are right now, not saying later on in the year, but right now, they are not as dynamic or, you know, that quote-unquote elite offense that everyone really expected them to be from the jump this season. And yeah, and again, I think that might be the problem, is that we set our expectations too high for what this offense could be.
Perhaps. I mean, the 30, 35 point a game average, Dan Bickley wrote about it. He's, could this team, you know, get 500 points? Could this team average 35 points a game? Maybe. But, you know, I look at the offensive efficiency. They went 50% on third down. That's, I mean, you can't expect more than that, except if you're giving up, you know, 63%.
Unless you're playing against the Cardinals defense, apparently.
Right. So 50% on third down. That's good. David Johnson averaged, he did a good year, or yards per average. Yes, he had the dynamic carry. He wasn't great early on, but he was effective. Carson Palmer was efficient. He wasn't making dumb throws. He was making the right reads. The receivers didn't play well. And Bruce Arians noted this. Fitz played a great game. Jerron Brown, in his limited snaps, looked good. But John Brown was any. I think the time off was very, very evident.
You know,
J.J. Nelson was a mess, and Michael Floyd
is still Michael Floyd.
He's still Michael Floyd.
I like, people know my feelings on Floyd. I don't have to go on about this, but there is no more frustrating player on this Cardinals offense than Michael Floyd, because every year we expect him to make the leap. And this year, especially because he's in a contract year, like, you see the numbers that these wide receivers are getting throughout the NFL, and you're like, holy cow, all he needs to do is probably put up what he did last year, and people are going to throw money at him.
I mean, Taylor Hall's been getting 4 years more than $40 million. Come on. Come on, Rams. Yeah.
Exactly. But, I mean, he had, what, 3 catches for 60 yards, and it was, again, the question of, can he win anywhere but as a, you know, big deep threat? Like, can he be a receiver that wins short and intermediate routes and not just going deep?
That's a good question. Especially since, are they going to give him a chance to do that this year? Because when you have a Larry Fitzgerald who's going to win underneath, and he's gonna find separation, he's gonna be great there, and you've got a David Johns who can do the same thing, even an Andre Ellington. I think what they ask Floyd to do is not, they don't really ask him to do much in the short, and maybe a little bit more in the intermediate. But yeah, I mean, that it's offensively, I mean, if you look at the numbers, Palmer had a good game. He didn't have a great game. David Johnson had a good game. I mean, he only carried the ball 16 times. You know, I averaged 5.5 yards a carry. You take the one carry out of it, and you've got 15 for 44. So it was a little bit less than 3 yards a carry. But I mean, he wasn't getting hit for negative yards, which is, you know, he was fine. David Johnson was fine. Carson Palmer was solid. Larry Fitzgerald was great, but no one else really stepped up. And so I wasn't too worried, especially they were playing a good Patriots defense. So I'm a little bit torn on what I think about the offense. And because they were effective, they just were not great. I think we were looking more at that offense was early 2014 Cardinals and not 2015 Cardinals. And the problem was is that the defense wasn't quite at that 2014 level. The defense didn't do anything great. And that's the thing. For me, the defense wasn't great. They gave up. I mean, if the yards per carry, they were solid in the yards per carry, but they gave up 106 yards on the ground. They didn't get their hands on many balls in the passing game. There were just those – and you take Brandon Williams. The issues came up again. He had a solid game overall, but 2 boneheaded plays, one where he just missed the sign to say, hey, you were not playing roll coverage, as they're saying. He's got to stick with his guy. No one beat him. He just didn't cover him. And then the other one, he tried to make a play on the ball and missed that, and the guy went down inside the 10. So the defense wasn't good. I mean, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't good. And then add on top of that, so the offense was fine. It wasn't great. It was good. The defense wasn't bad, but it wasn't good. It was fine. And then the special teams, they were dreadful.
Yeah, and the defense's problem was, I thought, fairly obvious. And that was that when you're going against a quick passing attack, you have to have speed somewhere. Speed on the defensive line, speed off the edge. And, you know, even with the addition of Chandler Jones, they still don't have a speed guy. Now, you know, not many people do, but they clearly don't have a Von Miller. But I talked about this with Tyler in our kind of our wrap-up video that we did. They don't even have really a DeMarcus Ware. That's where the issue comes in, is that they lack the speed on the edges to beat a, you know, quick passing game. But in this game, they had zero interior pressure. And if you're going to beat it and you have no edge speed, like that elite edge speed, and that's not a shot at Golden or Chandler Jones, that's just reality. Like, you know, they're not as talented as the Broncos pass rushers, but they are good enough to, you know, make a difference if they get help from the interior. But there was zero, outside of the one Gunter Golden, you know, half sack. I don't know. Did they give a half sack? I didn't even look at the stats. I gave it a half sack. I thought Gunter got there. They gave it to Golden.
They'll give it all to Golden, at least for now, with the sack and the strip.
So, but you know, you look at it and it's just like, that was the only play in the entire game where you're like, wow, that was impressive. Even Chandler Jones' sack, you're like, that's it. Like he kind of had a run, and like, I mean, it was a nice play. Don't get me wrong. It's something that they missed, but you know, you're like, why is it taking you all game to be able to do that? And so when you run those quick, you know, when you're playing against a quick offense, and I've heard a lot of people say, you know, oh, the Patriots schemed that so to help Jimmy Garoppolo. This was no different than their normal Tom Brady based offense.
That's what impressed me, is that they took the exact same scheme and Garoppolo did it well. And maybe we should have expected this because we saw Matt Castle do it. You can go 11-5.
Yeah.
And
that's what I was getting at, is that it doesn't, like, you have
I was
to disrupt.
I was so impressed with their scheme. I was very impressed with their scheme.
You have to disrupt that somehow, some way. And that comes, like I said, if you don't have that and there's only one really in the NFL, it's Von Miller. Like, there's no other guy that can, you know, get to Jimmy Garoppolo or last year Tom Brady in that 2.31 seconds. That was the average snap to throw time he was at, 2.31. Brady last year finished at 2.33, I think. Jordan Plotcher told me from Pro Football Focus. So it's not like, I mean, yeah, 0.02 seconds is probably a lot in the scheme of everything, but it's not like it was that big of a difference. It's not like he was under 1 or under 2 seconds in his snap to throw. Like, it really didn't change. They just didn't have the horses. Kimdiche didn't get hardly any snaps. Rucker got hurt. And, you know, we've watched enough of Calais Campbell, Josh Morrow to know that quick interior pressure is just not their strength. That's not what they're best at. This was a game where you needed a Robert Kimdiche to come in and disrupt things, and his offsides penalty basically got him benched for the game.
More or less. And there were a couple of things I'm looking through the things here through the game book. And if I could say one thing about Jimmy Garoppolo, that, you know, the Cardinals knew they had to be prepared for it. Garoppolo's legs got them some plays and extended some drives, something that they wouldn't have gotten from Tom Brady. And so it was a little bit of dynamic. So he was basically running the exact same offense, only he added a threat to move. I can point to two or three plays on third down that were a problem. The first one was the Kimdiche and neutral zone infraction. What the heck was he doing? They weren't even set. It went from 39 to 3rd-and-4, and guess what happens? They pick up 4 yards in the first down. You know, I don't know if the play changes, if they complete the pass. They were in position to force the punt. That was 3 points. It ended up being in that drive. So that penalty essentially cost them 3 points, potentially. There was the third down incompletion where Kevin Minter got pegged with the personal foul. That was another very, very bad penalty.
And that was just a dumb one, because I think it was Morrow, but Morrow had him up top already. So there was there was not even a reason for Minter to take that shot. I mean, it wasn't like he was the only one getting – like Morrow or whoever the defensive end was there to make the play. And Minter just – and I heard some fans whining about it. Like, if that happened to Carson Palmer, could you imagine Cardinals Twitter, Facebook, just the reaction if that would have happened to Carson Palmer? That's the way I always think about it. Like, if that exact play would have happened to your player, in this instance, Carson Palmer, how would you have reacted? And I don't think there would have been any Cardinals fan that would have been okay with that play.
Well, and that was the Carson Palmer rule. Yeah. That rule was because of Carson Palmer when his knee was shredded in Cincinnati. That was exactly what that was for. So, I mean, those were dumb plays. And it was plays like that. Add to that the early touchdown, the Brandon Williams mental gaffe, and then you add the one later. They had a hard time with LeGarrette Blount as well. He wasn't great, but he was enough of a problem. And so,
well, and I think this is a good, like, we didn't plan this, but I think this is a good segue to talk about offensive game plan and how much Bill Belichick or Josh McDaniels are willing to just continue to stick with the run game no matter what is going on, whereas we see it way too often with Bruce Arians. They just abandon the run game. And, got to let Carson sling it all over the field and hope that this works out. Like, and it was just one of those things you're like, what? Like 19 total carries, two of which were Carson Palmer carries. Like David Johnson carried 16 times. Chris Johnson got one carry, and Andre Ellington didn't run the ball once. Like, what is going on?
And Bruce Arians gets caught in that trap. I mean, he does every he talks about wanting to be 50-50. I laugh at that. The only way the Cardinals are 50-50 is this: they're playing from ahead. And if the Cardinals don't play from ahead, they don't play. They don't run the ball. That's just the way Bruce Arians goes. That's just how he calls plays. It's just a reality. So there's no way they never, and whatever the reason is, and they just don't run the ball consistently unless they're playing from ahead. And unfortunately, especially, you know, New England got that early touchdown. Now, they started running the ball a little bit more. And, you know, there was their first drive. They did run it some. So in their first touchdown drive, it went 11 plays. They went 6 plays. They ran the ball 6 times in their first drive. Then you look at the other touchdown drives. You see there's the second touchdown run that they had, it was one run and another run. It was just the two, but there was only 5 plays. And
I think it was that second one. That was embarrassing. Was that the one where he took 6 Cardinal defenders? Like,
oh, yes. That, the Blount touchdown, yes. That was, that was right after the Brandon Williams mistake when Milt Mitchell took it down to the 8, and then LeGarrette Blount. I mean, he bowled over Tyrann Mathieu and dragged 6 players into the end zone.
I don't think about it anymore.
And then the Cardinals' last touchdown drive, they ran the ball once. That's it. And then that one play was the 45-yard dynamic, you know, video game run by David Johnson. So, you know, I come away from that game. I'm not terribly worried. And it's almost like this. I was upset in the moment, you know, going into it. Oh, it's like the Pittsburgh game. They lost to Landry Jones. What the heck? In the big scheme of things, this wasn't awesome. However, they are playing a little bit behind now in the division, because we were talking just a week ago of how they could be 6-0 going into that Seattle game. Never mind. We could still be talking 5-1, but we're looking differently, and you know, expectations just were changed a little bit.
Who gave us a podcast is what I want to know.
I don't know.
6-0. What were we?
But no, we got caught up.
Well, and what I said about this, and I wrote about this today, I don't think enough people are overreacting to what happened. And it's not because I think that the season is lost or anything like that. Like, it's one game. But it's concerning that the flaws that they ended 2015 with are basically the same flaws that they're starting 2016 with. And that's what the concern is to me. Like you said, it's not panic, it's not worry, but I think it is concerning that you're at this spot still.
And maybe this is good for the Cardinals fan base, the Red Sea, because to be honest, we don't know. We have no idea how to handle front running. We don't know. We don't know. We don't know how to do it. We don't know how to live on top and with expectations to be, yeah, our team is awesome. It's not good for the team, but it's probably good for the fans to take a step back and you know, a little perspective. We haven't won anything yet. The Cardinals haven't won anything yet. They're in position. Let's not be Seahawks fans and let's not be, and they have something, even they even have something to be proud of. They've been to the Super Bowl. They've been to two Super Bowls. They've won one. So good. I mean, it's bad for the team because it's a loss, and now, but it's a good time to lose, and it wasn't a bad game to lose. But the narrative changes, like we talked about. You know, this was a no-win situation for the Cardinals, as we talked about. They beat Tom Brady or lose to Tom Brady in the same fashion, it's no big deal. It's disappointing, but it's no big deal. Lose to Jimmy Garoppolo without Rob Gronkowski, and now it's, oh. And even then, here's a perspective. The Cardinals still should have won that game. I mean, as not great as they played, they were a kick away from winning it. And then so, you know, take the Catman, you know, he hooked it. He just missed it. The snap was a little low. The hold didn't get up quick enough, and he just missed it. We can't really have that from – he needs to get back. You know, can't do that again. But even as, you know, we say that we didn't play well. They didn't play great. They won the turnover battle. They didn't play great. They still were one play away from winning the game. So I'm okay with it, and I'm not worried. Especially because I found more and more respect for the Pats, and that Pats team is going to be really good this year. I'm pretty convinced of that now.
Right. But, you know, this is what I said, and I'm not, like I said, I'm not concerned, but I'm not worried, but I am concerned because I think there's a lot that you look at and you're like, ugh. But you look at it and you go, imagine if the Cardinals went to Seattle and they won without Carson Palmer, Larry Fitzgerald, Jared Valdir, DJ Humphreys, and Marcus Golden. All of those guys not playing. Like, what would the reaction be for Seattle, and then what would the reaction be in Arizona? And I think that's where my disconnect is that I get that Bill Belichick is the best coach in the last however many years. And I get that he had 5 months to plan for this, but the Cardinals had 5 months too. And Bruce Arians is supposed to be, you know, if not the second best coach, one of the top five coaches in the NFL. And the team themselves just looked overmatched. I mean, that was kind of my biggest thing, is that they looked on all, like you said, on all three levels, the Patriots defense looked better. The Patriots' offense looked better, and then, you know, I don't even want to get into special teams because I don't even know what's going on there anymore.
I was glad to see Patrick Peterson return that punt and then do what he did all of, you know, he takes the the best angle he can for yards and runs out of bounds. But oh my gosh, if I hear Bruce Arians talk about Andre Ellington being a great returner, I don't know what I'm going to do, because he looks
he's awful,
terrible.
Because you're much nicer than I am, he's awful. Like I get that other guys have to block. I really do. Trust me. I was a long snapper for a long time, but he is not an effective guy right now. Like everything that you love about Andre Ellington as an offensive player, we as a fan base have not seen as a returner right now. Have we?
I don't.
Like he's not dynamic. He is not aggressive, and he doesn't look fast. He looks hesitant, and he looks like you don't want to say afraid, but he just looks unsure. That's the word I'll use. Unsure.
We haven't seen. Just been the whole kickoff return game. Aside from that, aside from the David Johnson touchdown in week two last year, it's just been a hot mess. It's just like I don't understand. J.J. Nelson gives you a little bit because he kind of slippery in that sense, but every time he touches the ball, he gets hurt or fumbles. So, yeah, I don't know what the thing is for there.
Well, and you and I talked about the J.J. Nelson.
J.J. Nelson.
Like, we knew that was going to happen eventually. Like, there's a reason. Like, there's a reason guys under 160 pounds don't usually make it in the NFL. And like he is very good, but he is small. And that's just the reality of football. Sometimes a guy is just not big enough to maintain and take the punishment that is needed.
A note of a couple of things as we talk about, I want to talk a little bit about the playing rotations, packages. That saw a couple of things different coming in this year. Offensively, I was intrigued by one. Well, there were actually two things that we saw. We actually saw on seven different plays, Andre Ellington and David Johnson in the backfield at the same time. That's fun. The tight end rotation I found was interesting because when they went with one tight end, it was always Darren Fells. So their one running back, one tight end was always Fells. When they went two tight ends, it was always Gresham with Nicholas. Offensively, defensively, we saw the plan for Tyrann Mathieu, and it appears that he is only a safety this year. At least that's what it's going to be early on. He's only a safety, and that apparently
wasn't that kind of similar to what he did when he came back after the first ACL. I thought it was similar.
He played so little to start the season, and when he was brought in, it took a few games, and he was brought in first as a seventh defensive back. Oh, okay. Sixth defensive back if we count Deion Buchanan as a linebacker. I think I finally accepted that. I just called Buchanan a linebacker now. But he it didn't take long for him to be back in the slot. They didn't play him in deep coverage, but that's what they did mostly. He was Rashad Johnson. He was Rashad Johnson back there, and Tyvon Branch, he is the slot guy. And I think that's we now know the role. Tyvon Branch is slot guy, and Mathieu plays more of a traditional safety, whether it be deep coverage, whether they put him kind of near the box to good coverage for picking up guys out of the backfield or to blitz. So he's more of a traditional safety as opposed to the versatile. And I would imagine that's probably going to be the case for the season. I think that's why they got Branch.
Yeah, and I point where I'm wondering if Branch needs to work outside, like as Mathieu gets healthier, and maybe he needs to move outside, and Brandon Williams can kind of still rotate in like he is doing, but. If they're going to go with a slot there, have it, be Mathieu and bump Tyvon out or, bump Tyvon back or I don't know. Like, the secondary, we talked about it before the season started. Like, we knew it was going to be a concern. Like, we knew it was going to be an issue. And if it was as simple as what Bruce Arians is saying is, oh, he missed a hand signal, blah, blah, blah. that's fine, I guess. But there are a lot of times where he was not in a good position, or, you know, we've talked about it before, his football awareness is just lacking. And I get the only way that that gets up to speed is playing, but how many Super Bowl contending teams have a liability like that on the field? Not just like in situations, but as a starter.
It's a good question. Moving on from that, coming back on Raise FC Red, next segment, we're going to talk about some of the injuries and the roster moves that have come forward, and how that talks about them moving forward, that how that affects them as they look ahead to week two and beyond. We're back on Rise Up, C-Red, and a couple of roster moves that were made. One on the practice squad, well, actually a couple of them. On Monday, Aaron Murray, they said goodbye to Aaron Murray. So Zach Dysart is the third quarterback on the roster, not active roster. He's on the practice squad. And
what a battle that must have been to watch.
And with the move on Tuesday as well, because Chris Hubert, the receiver that everybody loved in training camp, he was released off the practice squad, and they bring back Marquise Bundy. And going to the Earth Theory a week ago as to why they had Murray and Dysart, that Murray was essentially Jimmy Garoppolo for their scout team. Then they finished playing the Patriots, and he's gone. And they keep the Bruce Arians-sized quarterback. They had the Buccaneers coming to town this week with their very big receivers in Vincent Jackson and Mike Evans. And what do? Off the practice squad, they take their little guy off the roster. And then they add a 6'4", 215-pound guy to be on the squad, on the scout team. I'm jumping on with that theory with you. I think Bundy probably won't be back on the practice squad a week from now. They might bring Hubert back, but I think it has to do with the personnel that they're going up against.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of that. Like they need, you know, Floyd and Bundy to kind of mimic the Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson duo. You look at it, Hubert, after what, the first 2 weeks of training camp, he really flamed out. We talked about that during training camp. And Bundy didn't really do anything until the last preseason game. Maybe did he do anything in the Houston game? I'm trying to remember off the top of my head.
I don't remember.
Feel like he did. So that probably means he didn't. But he did look good against the Broncos. So, I mean, I'm kind of with you. Like, I think this is a lot of, you know, this is a lot of the way that they're going to do things this year to match up and kind of get in sync with what other teams are doing.
And then there were a couple of injuries that came out of that game. No, there's actually three injuries that actually have some concern. One is Drew Butler, who played all game with what Bruce Arians called a severely sprained ankle. Although Butler did say on Monday that he's getting treatment, he should be fine by the end of the week to kick for this next weekend. We'll see how that goes. But two players that are going to miss some time. One, Frosty Rucker, what appears to be the exact same injury that Kareem Martin has a sprained MCL, going to miss 2 to 3 weeks. Luckily, they have a whole bunch of depth on that defensive line, and it's not like anyone after Calais Campbell plays a bunch of snaps. So that will be an increased role for Rodney Gunter, and probably will bump Ed Stimson off the inactive list and into the rotation. And then the other guy is Evan Mathis, and we have conflicting reports on a Tuesday evening. The first coming from Bruce Arians, who spoke on SiriusXM NFL Radio, saying that Mathis is day-to-day, followed up by about an hour later, Mike Jarecki saying that he's hearing that it's he's got an issue with his foot that's going to keep him out 1 to 4 weeks. So that's fun. So the old oft injured offensive lineman they bring in, go figure, can't make it through a full game, is now going to miss either a day or two or all the way up to a month.
This is something that we never saw coming.
And that's luckily they've got an Earl Watford who is fine.
talented.
He's
and
fine.
I wonder now if Toner's going to be active this week. I was kind of actually surprised he was inactive. I'm not going to lie.
You know why? You know why Bane was active? He plays special teams. He's on kickoff.
Oh, okay. Bane's I was just surprised Toner was inactive because Upati's got the knee thing. Mathis got the double ankle things. You know, how many positions is Watford going to play?
All of them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Apparently, he's just going to play two both guard spots if both guys go down. So,
well, if you think about it, I mean, in a pinch, because Shipley can play guard too. So if someone goes down, they can move Shipley over and put Bame over at guard. Bame's played guard and put Bame at center. Bame's played guard before. I mean, it's been a long time since his freshman year at college. But, I mean, I can see that happening. So we're going to see that. They happen to be in positions where they have some depth. I mean, you've got Watford, who we probably think is a starting caliber offensive lineman, but his value is greater because he's coming off the bench and can do so much. But he's got the talent who should be able to start pretty much anywhere in the NFL. And then you've got Frosty Rucker. Aaron said he's going to miss they're going to miss his leadership. But in terms of production on the field, I mean, you can get what you got, and hopefully Kim Dichie's butterflies, whatever it was, it was just a first game thing, and that then he can improve this week. An interesting defensive rotation I saw. The first time that they went with their dime, when they brought DJ Swearinger in and took Kevin Minter out for the six DBs, that the first play that I saw at their two defensive linemen was our future wrecking balls of Rodney Gunter and Robert Kendici on the defensive line. No Campbell. It was the two young guys on the D line paired up with, you know, you had Marcus Golden and Chandler Jones. You had Dion Buchanan and then six defensive backs.
Yeah. And I'm interested to see how they kind of continued this rotation. As you said, Rucker, I want to call him Gunter. Don't lose Rodney Gunter.
Please don't.
Rucker out. That really, I mean, like you said, Stinson's probably going to become active because, you know, even with the nine defensive linemen, only apparently six can play. Peters, I didn't think looked bad, and so it's good to see him healthy and playing. And then Gunter, I would like to see him get a little more time as a DN. So maybe this is, you know, a blessing in disguise. Hopefully, you know, it's nothing serious for Frosty and it's just the 2 or 3 weeks. But, and on the – on the offensive line, I don't know, man. Like, it looked like, and I recorded the game and it got deleted. I don't want to talk about it, but
you don't want to see it anyway. It's okay.
Well, but no, there was a play where, like, I think, it was David Johnson's touchdown. If you go back and look, it looks like Mike Upati was like messing with his knee, and that's why I wanted it. I want to go back and look at it, but it got erased though. Like I said, I don't want to talk about it, but it's like, oh man, are both these guards like legit injury concerns every week? Like you said, Mathis is day to day. Upati, like, is the knee like catching? Like, what's up with his knee? Like, you know, it was kind of like Fitz. Like, it was kind of out of nowhere. You didn't see it coming, and yeah, so we'll see. But yeah, and then John Brown. Like, is it rust or is it something that we actually need to be concerned about? Like, I know they're not going to tell us, the media or the fans or anything, but, like, is that something that, like, we need to start watching? And, like, this isn't even a fantasy-related thing. Like, you want him to be healthy and have a, you know, enjoyable life outside of football. And so, you know, if he's hesitating or if he's having issues where he's having headaches or whatever it is, you know, like, is this a concern or is he just out of shape? And, you know, you hope it is just out of shape. Like, that's all I can say about that right now.
So let's move on to the last part of the show. And that's looking ahead to Tampa Bay, a team that got four passing touchdowns from Jameis Winston. They got themselves a division win in Atlanta, and now they come to town to Arizona against a team that, you know, Bruce Arians says, give us a week, and apparently he's kind of confident that they're going to bounce back and play well this week. What do we expect from – what should we expect from Tampa Bay? They do have a talented young quarterback. They have size on the outside and at tight end. And then they have, as Bruce Arians said, just an absolute wrecking ball in the middle with Gerald McCoy. How do they match up to this Bucs team?
We want to talk about that already? You know, McCoy is a wrecking ball. They are without maybe their best edge pass rusher for the rest of the season. Already, I think his name's something Lewis. I can't remember now off the top of my head. Feel bad for that guy because he's been playing so well. I think he had 7.5 sacks last year, and so they were expecting a lot from him, and he tore his ACL in the first game. So that's just a tough one. Their defensive line, you know, I didn't think the Patriots' defensive line was that good, so I don't want to say too much. But their defensive line has a better singular player in Gerald McCoy. But I'm not sure overall they are better than the Patriots' defensive line was. So maybe there's that to look forward to. Their secondary is not as good right now. And also, heads up, Arizona Cardinals fans, do not tweet anything about Brent Grimes at all. Like, you just don't want the headache of what happens if you do it. So,
or maybe we do, because that would be fun.
No, I have no desire to.
I mean,
zero desire to deal with that. So, but you know what? Offensively, man, they're good. They are close to being that team that you want to, like, they're close to being offensively that must DVR team. Like, that's going to be exciting to watch because Jameis Winston is really good right now. And then Doug Martin's a nice running back. And then you have, you know, you have those big body wide receivers outside. Austin Seferian Jenkins is a nice weapon at the tight end position. You know, it's just, they're a very balanced offense and they have a quarterback that by the end of the season is probably going to be mentioned among the top 10, if not higher. So they're going to have their work cut out for them. This is a game where you need, you know, they're not going to get rid of the ball quite as quick. So you're going to need to see Marcus Golden and Chandler Jones
get winning a little bit more.
Yeah, a little more consistently. Like I said, they each got one sack. That's great. You know, that was nice. But you need to see them pressing the pocket and forcing the quarterback to make their decisions a little quicker. That was one of the things that, you know, they weren't able to do, especially with those short routes, is that they nickel and dime the Cardinals to death in that game. You know, you talked about it with the Saints the year before, death by a thousand cuts. And that was, you know, similar this week. That's not Tampa Bay's style, but old Dirk Cutter is not a bad offensive mind. We've seen that, the fact that the Bucs were willing to fire Lovie Smith in order to keep Dirk Cutter on staff. So,
yeah, and you know, we saw personally, you know, we saw firsthand Arizona fans here when he was way back when he was coaching Arizona State. Their passing offense was impressive. He is a guy that can get away from the run. He's kind of Bruce Arians like in that sense, but you know, that's going to be a talented team. Now, the thing that is nice is for the Cardinals is that the Bucs don't have the poise, experience, and confidence that the Patriots do. They don't come in with that swag. They don't come in with the same type of swagger. So the Patriots, when they won that game, no one in that locker room was like, yeah, we beat the Cardinals. They're like, yeah, we beat the Cardinals.
Yeah, just another day at the office. And the other thing is, as good as a coach that Dirk Cutter may be, you know, let's be completely fair and honest, he is 1,000 times away from being Bill Belichick. So,
exactly.
You know, this is that, that's where, you know, you're kind of at on this is what happens. Can the Cardinals begin to reestablish their dominance and how good they can be? Because I don't see a way that it's possible that this team is not good. Like, and it wasn't that the loss changes that, but if they start 0-2, the show next week, the tone is going to be a lot different. Because we were literally a week ago, we were talking about 6-0 heading to Seattle, Carolina. And now we're talking about, could this team actually start 0-2 and have to figure out a way to get to 4-2 before they head to Seattle and Carolina? Because then we're talking about 4-4 at the bye. I mean, we're legitimately talking about if they can't find a way to get this corrected in 6 days, that this team could legitimately go into the bye at 4-4. And that is not what any of us had in our mind.
Let's just hope that doesn't happen, because the whole idea of this offseason was improving so that they could get home field advantage. You're not going to get home field advantage starting 0-2 unless they go on one of those Chiefs runs. I don't know, but geez, you know, that's going to be an interesting, it's going to be an interesting game to watch. Hopefully we see more playmaking, more dynamic playmaking on both sides of the ball. Cause we didn't see a lot of that. Let's see better, either some great play on defense or some great play on offense instead of just, they weren't bad.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see.
I think you and I both agree. Like you said it kind of at the top of the show, like they need somebody other than Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson to be great. Like Carson Palmer was good-ish. Like he missed some throws. He was good-ish. But like we talked about this all off season, the cornucopia of weapons that they had. And at the end of the game, I mean, I have a vine of it. Palmer's throwing the ball to Fitzgerald, who's not even really looking or paying attention.
Yeah, that one play, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's 2nd and 2, and he's like, all right, I'm just getting the ball to Larry because I know he's going to make a play.
If it's any other player, that probably gets intercepted.
Right, and so
turns around, oh, ball, I'll grab it.
Yeah, and then he goes 20 yards downfield. So, yeah, so it's just one of those things. Like, you want to see the guys that you were expecting so much from, Michael Floyd, John Brown, you know, DJ Humphreys had his share of problems. Chris Long, you know, if you buy the PFF grades, Chris Long ate his lunch all day. You know, Chris Long was dominant via the PFF grade scale. So that's, you know, you want to see those guys step up. And then, like you said, defensively, like somebody needs to make a play. Like, and that's what's hard. How often do you see a team commit or force 2 turnovers and still not be able to get stops when they need it? Like that was, that was just such a weird game.
It was.
Hopefully it is just
a week one thing.
Yeah, week one, like, bad epiphany. Like, I don't know if epiphany is the right word, but, like, just a week one blip on the screen of what is to come to that 12-4, 13-3 season that you and I talked about. Maybe this is the game they lost. You know, you had them at 13-3. I had them at 12-4 because I figured they'd go Arizona Cardinals.
Hopefully that's the game.
Maybe this was the game.
And with that, let's go ahead and wrap up this final bit of Rise Up Sea Red. Hopefully we'll be back. Hopefully the next time you hear from us in a week, it will be with a 1-1 Cards team when everything feels a little bit better. The sky's not falling. We're not overreacting, and we should just fire and cut everybody. So that wraps up. That will wrap up Rise at Sea Red. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. You can find us pretty much wherever you want. You find us on iTunes. The show is there. You can find it on Stitcher Radio, on the site at cardswire.com, revengeofthebirds.com. We're also featured on sports360az.com. And also you can get us on Twitter, Rise Up Sea Red, or on Facebook, Rise Up Sea Red. Thanks for listening, everybody. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Have a good rest of the week, and go Cardinals.